And since we'll be reading a chapter from An Open-Hearted Life, let's have our motivation for sharing the Dharma today together to be an open-hearted one. One that takes all living beings into account, no matter who they are or what they think, what political or religious affiliations they have, but a mind that respects ourselves and respects all living beings and wants the best for all of us. And so with that compassionate mind, let's listen and share together so that we can, through changing ourselves, make a positive contribution to society. So, An Open-Hearted Life was co-authored with Dr. Russell Colt, who's a professor at Eastern, psychology professor. And, you know, we each wrote different entries and then compiled them so that they flow together to make a book, talking about compassion from both the point of view of a psychologist and the point of view of a Buddhist nun. So it's interesting that, you know, when, like today, the chapter that we're on is a chapter that Russell wrote. And so instead of reading my chapters, where I kind of know what I say, I'm reading Russell's chapters and explaining them. So it's very interesting for me to do that, you know, because certainly we have a lot of commonalities, but we do approach things from a different perspective sometimes, or we say things in different ways. Okay, so this is chapter 8, yeah, and it's called A Different Kind of Strength. So in the previous chapters, we've talked a little bit about what compassion is, how it functions, what it isn't. And here, yeah, Russell's especially bringing out that we often think that compassion is just passivity, it's weakness, it's being a wimp and letting people get away with things. But he's bringing out the point that compassion is actually based on inner strength. And it's not a weakness. It enables the mind to be quite clear and quite strong. Okay, so I'll start reading and then stop from time to time to make some comments. So while cultivating compassion may be challenging and uncomfortable at times, it's worth it. Compassion enables us to live our values, help other people, address problems in our communities, and to make a better world. Okay, so for anybody doubting the value of compassion, that's a good argument for the value of compassion. Approaching challenges with compassion enables us to transform our minds, have a positive effect on the situations and people with whom we come into contact, and to support others and ourselves when we're faced with things we can't change. And I think especially in America today, compassion enables us to listen to people who have different views, to accept that not everybody thinks like us, and that people have different needs and different solutions to those needs. Okay. So I think compassion can really help us heal a lot of the divide that we feel in the country right now. Yeah. The more we practice compassion, the easier it gets. Thank goodness. We discover we can do it. We find we can bear all the scary things we've built up in our minds and the feelings we thought were completely unbearable. As we courageously face the things that scare us over and over again, they stop being so scary. Okay, so whether these are external situations or people that we find scary, or internal emotions and thoughts that we find scary, the more we're able to face them with equanimity, without getting so reactive, then they gradually lose power over us. Psychologists call this habituation. It means that when we're repeatedly exposed to things that scare us and nothing terrible happens, our fear gradually decreases over time. As Shantideva wrote in The Way of the Bodhisattva, there is nothing whatsoever that is not made easier through acquaintance. And that's really true. Whatever we do repeatedly becomes easier. Yeah, so something may be intimidating at first, but if we nudge ourselves in that direction because we know it's a good direction for us to go in, then sooner or later that perspective will feel much more natural to us. When we sit together with those who are feeling grief-stricken, terrified, or furious, and have a compassionate attitude towards them, we begin to understand that we can be in the presence of others' strong emotions without having to react to them, fix the situation, or escape. Yeah. How many of you have difficulty being with other people when they have very strong emotions, like grief or anger or fear or whatever? Yeah, our tendency very often is, you know, this is too much, I can't handle it, you know. Just even being in a room with somebody who's experiencing strong emotions. Okay, so when we spend time with such people whose background, manners, beliefs, or lifestyles may initially put us off, we begin to understand that they are valuable people who have hopes and dreams just like us, who only want to be happy and not suffer just like us. Okay, so whether the people are quite different externally from us or whether they're experiencing a strong emotion, we learn that we can sit together with them as one human being with another human being. Because basically, inside, we're the same. Okay, so when I, Russell, first started running compassion-focused therapy, anger management groups in prison, I was a bit intimidated. Some of the men were in prison because of rape, murder, and other violent offenses, and I was there to work with the really angry ones. However, I soon discovered that these men were just like me in so many ways. And when given an opportunity to show compassion, they not only claimed responsibility for their crimes, but also actively took responsibility for changing their lives and committed to replacing their anger with compassion. So I've been doing prison work for about 20 years now, and one of the things that I've noticed in this, that the people respond to the most, is the idea that they can become compassionate human beings. Because I think so often people who are frustrated and angry because of not having needs met, you know, such that they act out and harm others, they haven't had compassion modeled for them. And in addition, they've been told for so long that they're no good, They're not going to amount to anything. They're stupid. And they've internalized this, sometimes because their parents have said it, sometimes because the school system has said it, or their friends. And so they have a very negative self-image of themselves. And of course, when you have a negative self-image, you can't think of yourself as being a kind or compassionate person. Yeah, because kind and compassionate people, it's a positive image, and they have a negative one. In addition, you know, because they often need, they're seeking attention, any kind of attention, then they find that they can get that attention most easily when they act out. Yeah. And so it's really, really touching when you see people who've had all these years of negative messaging and have come to believe it, all of a sudden go, oh, wow, you mean I'm not hopeless? You mean I can be a compassionate person? Really? And it's just amazing what that does to their minds, you know, how it gives them renewed faith in themselves. And so some of the guys that I work with are just amazing Dharma practitioners, especially one man. He's in prison in North Carolina for killing his mother and his stepfather. So, you know, not somebody who, you know, just like, you know, slugged somebody. He did some pretty heavy stuff. And he is an excellent practitioner. Really excellent. He really tries to change situations around. And in the process of doing so, he's had a lot of influence on the other men that he's incarcerated with. And he was able to get a job in the chaplain, as a chaplain clerk, in one prison that he was in. Getting jobs is very difficult, and they pay you like maybe 10 or 15 cents an hour. But it's a privilege to have a job. Anyway, when this chaplain was transferred to another prison, he asked that Al be also transferred there because he wanted him to, again, be the clerk. That's how much this guy who murdered two people has changed. Yeah. No, and it's because of the whole idea that I can be a compassionate person. Yeah. There's a possibility for me to influence people in a positive way. So Russell goes on, after running these groups for more than 3 years, I can honestly say I've never worked with a more committed, hardworking group of people. While it took a few sessions for these men to connect with the idea of seeing themselves as compassionate, they almost immediately began putting the compassionate understandings and practices I was teaching them to work. Instead of rushing to judge and condemn themselves and others, they began to seek understanding. Instead of reacting to small irritants and larger ones with fury and violence, they began to slow down, take a moment to soothe themselves, and try to take a broader perspective. Instead of indifference, they began extending kindness to others in the prison, even going so far as to enthusiastically teach their cellies, in other words, their cellmates, and other men on their units what they were learning in the anger management class. Perhaps the most frequent comment I've heard from these men is how often other people, from correction officers to family members, have asked them, "What happened? You're different. What are you doing?" And their answers are compassion. This has been my experience, too, in working with the inmates. Compassion, and I should say respect, you know, and I think those two go hand in hand. A respect does not mean fearing somebody. It means seeing their good qualities and values and honoring those qualities and values. And what I've found also in working with inmates is that, I mean, I just treat them like I treat everybody. And just doing that is astounding to them. Yeah, because again, the whole prison system is designed to humiliate people, to put them down, to make them feel less than, to punish them. So it's the prison system is not focused on rehabilitation at all. And so if you just talk to people like you talk to everybody else, they're like flabbergasted, you know? It's really quite amazing, and they learn to respect themselves, and then they learn also to respect other people. And of course, if they show respect to the prison guards, then their life in prison becomes much easier. Okay, and that helps the prison guards too. Yeah. I don't think many people, when they're little, say, I want to grow up to be a prison guard. You know, it's not really a job of choice. It's a job of necessity. It's not an easy job. And so if a prisoner learns compassion and respect and treats even the prison officials like that, it makes their life easier as well. And my guess is stops a lot of domestic violence. When we compassionately allow ourselves to experience the full range of our emotions, including those that may seem overwhelming or off-putting, we begin to understand we can experience them without being overwhelmed. So here, Russell's moving into not just treating others with compassion, but learning to be compassionate with ourselves, especially when our own emotions are scary. Yeah. For many people, they find their own anger frightening. Yeah. Not only is it unpleasant, but they're scared of what they may say or do under the influence of anger. And rightly so, because sometimes, you know, what we do when we're angry is we would never do when we're in a normal state of mind. Okay? So becoming intimately familiar with our own fear, anger, grief, craving, and or disgust, we learn it is possible to move into and out of these feelings without becoming forever trapped in them. Okay, so when we have a compassionate attitude to ourselves, towards ourselves, we can see, okay, anger is arising or bitterness is arising. And we can just say, oh, okay, here it is again. It's just an emotion. It's not the reality of who I am. I don't need to be afraid of it. Yeah, it's something transient. It comes and it goes. And I'm not a bad person for having it. Because I think one thing that adds fuel to the fire is often we'll have a negative emotion arise and then we judge ourselves. Yeah, or we make a mistake and then we judge ourselves. And so this just compounds things. Yeah. Oh, here I am. I'm getting angry again. Oh, you know, I'm a failed Buddhist. you know, or whatever it is. We think of 1,001 ways to judge ourselves. You know, here I am, I'm competitive again, you know, and trying to humiliate the other people so I can be on top. And I'm so arrogant, you know, what a selfish person I am. Well, criticizing ourselves like that when we have a disturbing emotion arises doesn't help to subdue the disturbing emotion. Yeah, it just adds you know, we have the disturbing emotion, and then we disturb ourselves more by criticizing ourselves. Yeah. And I remember one time working with one young man who's very critical, self-critical, and saying, you know, you don't need to be that way. And he said, oh, yes, I do, because if I'm not critical, I won't keep my emotions in check. I won't guard my behavior. It's only by, you know, being hard on myself that I'm able to, you know, keep these things at bay. And I said, I don't agree. Yeah, being hard on yourself, you know, it doesn't help you process those emotions or understand them and see where they're coming from and what you can do with them. Yeah. In other words, judgment does not help us very much. Okay. Discernment helps. Judgment doesn't help. Okay. So discernment, that arrogance, yeah, causes problems and it makes me unhappy. That kind of discernment is good. But judgment, what a negative person I am for being arrogant, that doesn't help the situation. Okay? Communicating? So, very important in this way. We need to be able to discern virtuous emotions and non-virtuous emotions, but not judge ourselves for the non-virtuous ones. Recognize them, and then we can start to do something with them. Yeah. But like pointing the finger at ourselves, look at you, you're so selfish, what a terrible person you are. That doesn't help us really figure out what it is we're needing and wanting. Okay. We can learn to direct warmth and compassion towards ourselves when we're struggling with our difficult emotions, just as we do to others. In this way, we gradually discover ways to feel safe as we allow ourselves to feel whatever emotions are there for us to feel. We learn to express empathy and develop compassionate skills we can draw upon as we go through life. Okay, so we have a little bit of empathy towards each other, towards ourselves. And I find this very helpful, especially when I'm looking back at past actions where I don't feel good about what I said or did. If I'm able to kind of look at the person who I was then and recognize I'm not that person now, but I understand that person who acted that way, then I can offer that my past self a little bit of empathy because I understand her. And also, because I'm more mature now, guide her to see another perspective and not get stuck in that past behavior. Okay? So it is quite, compassion towards ourselves is very helpful. When all of this comes together, habituation, understanding, and new skills, we have a new kind of strength. We begin to experience a confidence and fearlessness that is truly powerful. It's the strength to face life head on, exactly as it comes. Our fear is replaced with a confidence that whatever happens, I can find a way to work with it. Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, to imagine, you know, who knows what happening in the future. And just saying, you know, I can find a way to work with this. I don't have to let any external situation, no matter what it is, completely turn my life upside down. Yeah, I have skills. I can use them and you know, deal with what life hands me. Because for sure, life is going to hand us a lot of uncomfortable situations. We're beings in samsara. There's no way to avoid them until we attain nirvana. When we have nirvana, then safety, security. Right now, You know, we're all going to face aging, sickness, and death. We're all going to face not getting what we want. Yeah. We're all going to face disillusionment and disappointment. And we're going to face problems. But we can develop a confidence that these things, you know, don't have to overwhelm us, that we can work with our mind, deal with our emotions, and find some sort of useful way to deal with the situation, even though the situation may not be exactly what we want. Okay? So that gives us a lot of peace in our lives, whereby we don't have to fight with the reality of what's happening to us at this moment. By recognizing what connects us, the concept of enemies becomes ridiculous. No longer threatened by perspectives that are different from our own, we become wiser, and the need to constantly assert our own viewpoints gives way to the eagerness to listen to and learn from others. Okay? Do any of you feel that you need to constantly reassert your own viewpoints? Yeah. This is what I think. Yeah. This is the way you should act. This is what I'm going to do, and this is not what I'm going to do. And your views are wrong. You voted for who? Are you out of your mind? Okay. Recognizing that the urgency we feel when a strong emotion arises is simply a property of the emotion itself, we can see when a situation calls for a more balanced, nuanced approach. Consider an argument with a partner or a family member in which you've become angry and are absolutely certain your perspective is correct. That happens in every argument with anybody, isn't it? Family member or not, our perspective is correct. Yeah. Why? Because it's ours. Yeah, and I am never wrong. And the problem is you are wrong and you don't realize it. Now that we got that clear. Okay. The anger or frustration arises and you feel an intense urge to continue the conversation, to keep trying to hammer your point home. Right? Even when the other person's body language is clearly telling you nothing is getting through right now. Ever been involved in a conversation like that? You can tell nothing you say or do is getting through to the other person. Yeah? But you feel, I haven't been heard, so I've got to say it again and again and force the point until they realize that I'm right and succumb to my wisdom, you know? And it's like my mother had a thing called, she used to say, don't knock your head against the wall. Yeah? But this is what we do. We knock our head against the wall and nothing's getting in. Yeah? But we can't stop ourselves. And so it just makes us more miserable and the other person more miserable too. In such situations, we can recognize that the urgency we feel to continue the conversation has little to do with what would be helpful and everything to do with the way anger plays out in our minds. Understanding this, we can instead choose to slow things down. It's remarkable how being able to slow down and listen to others makes them much more motivated to slow down and listen to us. Imagine that. We also learn we can accept our emotions without having to act on them. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Without having to recoil from them or shame ourselves for having them. Instead, we can relate to them warmly as old friends we value, but who sometimes can mislead us. Okay, so you develop the ability to say, anger, I recognize you. While I understand that you're just trying to protect me, your methods aren't very well suited to the situation at hand. Let me help you. So you kind of talk to your anger instead of going, anger, get out of here. Yeah. So as soon, it's like, you know, it's like saying to somebody, don't think of a giraffe. What do you think of? A giraffe. You know, anger, get out of here. What do you feel? Angry. Yeah. Whereas if you just say, okay, hello, anger. Yeah, I know you. Yeah. And you're trying to protect me. But, you know, yeah, the way you protect me often just doesn't work so well. So hold on here, you know. Let's look at the situation a different way and see if we can come up with a better solution. Okay? So you kind of learn to talk to different parts of yourself as if you were an older brother or older sister, kind of giving them advice. Yeah? Think of the people you may consider as models of compassion. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Jesus, Mahatma Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa, they all exhibit fearlessness in the face of situations that would make many of us cower. They keep going when many of us would turn aside. It's not that they were never afraid. It's that they weren't afraid of being afraid. Okay? They weren't afraid of being afraid. They accepted their fear and kept going anyway. That's the courage of compassion. Yeah. So sometimes we're in new territory. We feel a little bit unsafe. And our habitual tendency is to withdraw into behavior patterns that we've used in the past. Yeah. Whenever I felt unsafe, this is how I deal with it. Yeah. So for some people, that is lashing out and yelling and screaming and creating a fuss. For other people, it's becoming invisible. Yeah. I'm angry. You know, I shouldn't be angry. I'll do something stupid. So I just back away and shut down. And that's the way I protect myself when I don't feel safe. Yeah. But do either of those ways of protecting ourselves work? Yeah. We're not actually dealing with the situation and our feeling of lack of safety. We're giving into the fear. Yeah. Whereas if we're able to stay and look and say, well, exactly, you know, why do I feel unsafe here? Then we may be able to learn something very interesting, even profound, about ourselves. Yeah? And then instead of that controlling us, yeah, we can make friends with us and we can learn how to feel safe in situations where previously we didn't feel safe. Mm-hmm. I remember once, yeah, the situation, I don't know how many years ago it was, but my roommate was getting married. And she came from an explosive family. She had told me a lot about it. She had asked me to be the bridesmaid at her wedding. And so I was at her family's house the morning of the wedding. And I don't know, her father was yelling about something, and her mother was yelling about something. And, you know, it was as she described me, you know, just chaos, everybody angry and yelling. And coming, you know, having had my own experiences with angry people that weren't so pleasant, I kind of froze and I felt quite unsafe around all this anger. Yeah. And I think, you know, nowadays that I would feel very different being in that same situation. You know, nowadays I'd be able to say, oh, there's angry people, they're suffering, and probably do the taking and giving meditation. Yeah. Instead of just like, you know, getting tight and frightened and panicked. Yeah. I was on a flight from Hamburg to Moscow, you know, and when was it? Oh, last month. And this one Russian woman had a dog with her, and the dog was this playful, sweet little thing. She stuffed him into, you know, a dog carrier. And the woman herself, she was very troubled. I don't know by what. We didn't speak the same language. And she was trying to sleep and moving here and moving there and agitated and angry and took the dog out of the carrier, and the dog yelped, and she stuffed him under a blanket, and he yelped even more and got angry at her, and she got angry at the dog. And it was awful, you know? And if we had spoken the same language, I would have moved over and, like, tried to help. But I couldn't. And so I just immediately went to the taking and giving meditation, where we imagine taking on others' suffering and giving them happiness, because her anger was just vibrating throughout the plane. Yeah. So I saw that and I thought, okay, you know, this is a difference than how I had reacted when at my friend's family's house. Yeah. To now, the fear wasn't there. Also, I've had some interesting experiences with officials. Yes. And I've learned just, you know, you smile, you treat them nicely, and instead of again going, what are they going to do with me? Okay. I was in Beijing, this was many years ago, in one of the main temples in Beijing. And I was there with a group of Singaporeans. And, you know, I'm a student of the Dalai Lama, and I had some pictures of him. So I, you know, there were some people nearby, and I just, who came up to me, and they could see that I was a nun, and I would give them pictures of His Holiness or of, you know, blessing cords or things. And then at one point, one man came up to me and he said, come here, you can't do that. And he was under an undercover, plain closed. Okay, I put the two together now. You know, police. And they hauled me off into another room, and I had to ask one of the people traveling with me to come and translate, because they were like going on and on and on in Chinese and I didn't understand anything, and they wanted my passport, and this was I think the second day of the tour. And they made me sign a paper written in Chinese that I would never, ever, ever do this again. You know, but I just, to me, it was like a comedy show. That's how I didn't get frightened. It was just like, it's kind of like a, you know, Like, what's that show we used to watch as kids where they played pranks on people? Yeah, you candid camera. Yeah. So it was like a candid camera show. Yeah, those of you from my generation. But, you know, and it's just like, okay, you know, I'll sign this paper if you want. I'll do what you want. And, you know. And then as the tour went on, it was so hilarious. The tour guide, yeah, at one point she said, I think you're an agent from the Dalai Lama's office carrying secret messages here to the Tibetans telling them to rebel. And I'm going like, oh, God. I've been accused of a lot of things, but this one, you know, never, sorry, you know, they don't trust me enough to carry secret messages to the Tibetans. I'm an NG, don't you know that? Oh, anyway, yeah, it was a great trip. Okay, so then there's a reflection that Russell wrote. Each chapter in the book has a reflection at the end, which is really nice because it helps you go back over the book, you know, what you just learned and think about it and do like a little meditative exercise. Okay, so the reflection is called, We All Want to Be Happy and Free from Suffering. At the heart of compassion is the realization we all want to be happy and free from suffering. We are all united by this simple truth. Consider your deepest desires. Aren't all of the activities you do each day centered on the wish to be happy and not to suffer? This is true for everyone else, too. That person in front of you in the queue talking loudly on her mobile phone wants to be happy and not suffer. The politician on the television viciously attacking his opponent wants to be happy and not suffer. The man begging for change on the side of the road wants to be happy and not suffer. When we can look beneath the external appearance of everyone's actions, we'll see a heartfelt wish to be happy and not suffer. This is really what unites us all. Yeah. As you go through your day and encounter different people, remind yourself that, like you, one of their deepest, innermost wishes is to be happy and not suffering. When you're at a red light, on the train, walking down the street, or waiting in a queue, look at the people around you and reflect, this person, like me, wants to be happy and avoid suffering. Let this knowledge enter your heart. So this is very good to do in traffic jams. Yeah? Excellent time to do in traffic jams, you know. All these people want to be happy and not suffer. Yeah, so no use blowing my horn, no use getting angry, you know, let's use this time to create compassion for others. Then take it a step further and extend a kind wish to them. May you be happy and free from suffering. Similarly, we can extend this kind wish to ourselves. Repeatedly extending compassionate wishes can transform our minds. As we gradually build up compassionate habits, they replace our habits to judge, criticize, and shame that keep us caught up in anger, anxiety, and negativity. Okay. So that's the end to the first section of the book. There's more to go, you can see. Okay, so questions, comments? What do I think happens when a person gets overwhelmed? We have this one mental factor called distorted attention or inappropriate attention. And I think what happens is that focuses on some event or person and goes round and around and blows up the situation, makes it such a big deal. And that distorted attention is very good friends with the self-centered mind, because all these overwhelming emotions, you know, that are based on stories, all concern us. Yeah, we don't get nearly as upset about things that concern other people. Yeah. And so we just spin around ourselves, exaggerate the situation, make it in like bigger than Mount Everest, and then say, I'm overwhelmed. Yeah. Whereas if you don't go through the exaggeration process and you're able to put the situation in perspective, you know, there's 7 billion human beings on this planet, you know, how many are so upset about the situation that happened to me? You know, nobody else but me. Yeah. So maybe it's really not so serious. It's not such a big thing to make a big deal out of. Yeah, and we can kind of talk ourselves down a little bit. But when we aren't used to monitoring our mind and being aware of what we're thinking or what we're feeling, then this very afflictive, self-centered process just takes over and controls us. Yeah. And that's the sad thing, because we don't really need to be overwhelmed. Yeah, it's our own afflictive mind that makes it so.
When I discovered Sravasti Abbey on the internet and saw that they had a course, the safe course for learning about Buddhism, I was very excited to sign up. I was like, oh, goody, goody, I can learn. And then when the course came through, I was so overwhelmed at how deep the questions were. I just didn't think I could do it. And I ended up putting it off until like the day before I had to have all the questions done. And as I went through course 1A, I got a little bit better at that. But guess what? Course B is a little more difficult. And so I started out overwhelmed again, and I had to talk myself down and say, one question at a time.
Yeah. So. That's exactly it. Yeah. Just one question at a time. Do what I'm capable of doing. Learn what I can. I don't have to be perfect right now. Yeah. Give ourselves a little bit of space. Yeah.
Well, I hear what you're saying. I think about most of the time, other people's problems are much easier for me to relate to. But lately, and I hate to bring up politics, but it's been a real part of my daily anxiety. You know, I'll hear about the children being separated from their parents, for example, and it makes me feel almost crazy. It seems unbelievable, and I feel terrible for them, but at the same time, I realize that my becoming angry or upset or weeping doesn't help much. And you know, how do we deal with that kind of anxiety where it really isn't it's personal in a way. I know it's my reaction, so therefore it's personal. Mm-hmm. But what's happening seems to be something almost universally awful. You know, how do we handle that?
I think rather than just going around and around how awful that is, how awful, how sad, it's like, yes, it's awful, and yes, it's sad, and what can I do? I can write letters. I can do the taking and giving meditation. In my meditation, I can imagine sending out light to these kids and to their parents. Yeah, so whatever I can do on a practical level, I do. Whatever I can't do on a practical level, I keep my heart open in my meditation to all of that. And I think in this, one thing I feel that it's easy to have compassion for the kids and the parents that are separated. It's so much more difficult to have compassion for the government that's doing that and the people who make those policies and force others to enforce those policies. You know, it's so easy to make it, you know, these are the victims and these are the enemies. And so to try and have some compassion for the amount of suffering and the amount of ignorance in the minds of those who have no empathy for other living beings. Because those people need a lot of help, don't they? Then let's sit quietly for a minute. Digestive meditation. So just think a little bit about what you heard. You know, so this is a more reflective meditation. Think about what you heard so that you can remember it and take it home with you. So we'll just do this for a couple of minutes. And then let's rejoice at the good energy, the merit, the virtue that we created together as a group and as individuals, and feel happy about it. And then you can even imagine it as a light at the center of your chest that you send out, sharing our good energy, our thoughtfulness, how we're challenging ourselves to expand our hearts. Sending all of that out to other beings in the universe as radiant light that brings peace to their own minds and lives.